dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as the battle space of the War for the Free World tour that we do here each day. And we often do it with extraordinary people, but this is an exceptionally good day at Secure Freedom Radio because we have not one, not two, but three of the women that I admire most who have just come from a press conference where we developed and explained and presented a new initiative of the Center for Security Policy entitled The Sharia War on Women. And you can find out much more about it at a website of that name, www.thesharia waronwomen.org. And first, we're going to be speaking with Noni Darwish. She's no stranger to our microphones, I'm happy to say, and I suspect no stranger to our audience. She is the author of several extraordinary books, including one very directly on this subject, Cruel and Usual Punishment, The Terrifying Global Implications of Islamic Law, and most recently, in fact, hot off the presses, a new book entitled The Devil You Don't Know. Noni Darwish, it's great to have you with us. Thank you for joining us so brilliantly at the National Press Club earlier in the day. Tell us very succinctly, if you would, what your basic message is to American women.
Well, I'm very happy that you're launching and starting this initiative about the war of Sharia on women, because it's high time for us to face this topic, you know, because it's everywhere. Everybody should be concerned about Sharia and women. Mm. Because the Muslim world now is Islam is going, minority Muslims in Western Europe, in America, in Australia, and we are starting to see the impact of Sharia, officially or unofficially, impacting our lives. And it's really a time to speak openly about it, because if we don't do it today, 30 years or 40 years from now, our daughters will have to deal with a big problem.
It may be even faster than that. Noni Darwish, you, of course, come from Egypt.
Yes.
You fled from a kind of Sharia program in your own world.
Absolutely.
You know firsthand what is involved here. Give us, in just the shortest of courses, what the implications for women are were Sharia to actually be insinuated into our country.
Well, I fled the Muslim world. Many people come to America to find a job. The reason I came to America, because I really wanted to feel free. And I don't miss a day without thanking God for the freedom I had in America. Mm. And unfortunately, many, many Muslims who left the Muslim world do it for the same reasons. Mm. But unfortunately, there is a group of Muslims, especially in organizations, organized Islam in America, that followed us here and want to impose the same Sharia that we fled from on us right here in America. When I went to a mosque early on in America here, I was told, don't assimilate in America and wear your Islamic clothes. In the 70s, when I was in America, in Egypt, I never wore Islamic clothes. Nobody. My mother never wore Islamic clothes. My grandmother never wore Islamic clothes. And I said, why should I wear Islamic clothes in America? It doesn't make sense. I've never done it. They said, well, we have to go back to our Sharia, to our way of life. This is what they want us to do. And Egypt, lo and behold, has become very close to full Sharia.
Yeah. We're going to be talking with Cynthia Farahat in our next segment, and she's going to be describing what's happening in real time. But just on this point about the organized Islamic community,
yes.
How would you characterize how they have come to be the putative leaders of Muslim Americans, given that they seem to be at odds with, why many Muslims came here in the first place.
Wherever we go, Saudi Arabia finances mosques, sends groups to claim that they are our leaders in America when they are really not our leaders. Mm. Their membership is probably maximum in a couple of thousand, like CARE, for instance. But the vast majority...
This is the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE. Yep.
Exactly. And most Muslims in America don't want to be affiliated with them. But they are pushing on our government and pushing in our educational system. They are pushing on our way of life. Mm-hmm. They are threatening us when we abandon Islam, when we leave Islam. Mm-hmm. We get threats.
Yeah. Tell us about that story. You spoke very passionately about an effort you had made to reach out to these hundreds of so-called leaders of the Muslim American community about apostasy and their attitude towards it.
We discovered Wafat Sultan and me and many other apostates or people who left Islam in America, who chose not to practice the religion because we were all living in fear. Our civil rights would be threatened. Sent fatwas of death are being threatened with. So when a young lady by the name of Rivka Berry, a girl who's only 17, had to run away from home because her life was threatened, that was the day when we felt we have to get together, we have to come in public, we have to start a movement to secure our freedom and our
And what did you call it?
Right. We called it FormerMuslimsUnited.org. And in it, when we launched it, we sent letters. It's almost a plea to all the Muslim organizations in America to please support us, support our right not to be Muslims or be atheists or be Christians. But, you know, this is the line that no religion should cross, which is kill those who leave it. And we asked them to support us, that they should condemn any laws that threaten our lives, our freedom, and our basic human rights.
And what kind of response did you get?
We sent it to over 160 organizations, Muslim organizations. We only received back two letters signed. And this was from moderate Muslims who are reformists. Mm. And it was from Ali Ilyami and
Dr. Zudi Jasser.
Yeah. And nothing. The others just...
So you mentioned the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Islamic Society of North America, the International Islamic Institute of International Islamic Thought. I always get this confused. IIIT. None of these prominent so-called leaders of the Muslim American community would condemn apostasy.
It was an opportunity for them to prove that Islam that even though they disagree with us, they could have signed and mentioned that even though we disagree with what you believe now, we still will defend your right, your freedom to leave Islam or to convert or not practice any religion.
They at least agree that you shouldn't be killed for doing that.
Exactly.
I mean, that seems a bare minimum. I said not condemning apostasy. It's not that. It's condemning the people who are trying to kill folks who actually leave Islam.
That would have been very good, in my opinion. That would have portrayed them in a very moderate way in America. But by totally ignoring us and not signing it, they really showed us where their hearts is.
It also says a lot, Noni Darwish, about where we are as a country with organizations like these as the putative leaders of these communities who are, in fact, working for the other side.
Exactly.
They are the people who are trying to bring Sharia here.
And they are not criticizing any aspects of Sharia to the Muslim world. Mm. All their energy is to promote Islam as a moderate religion to the American people.
Right.
and not to where it's supposed to be.
Let alone moderating it.
Yeah.
Noni Darwish, your work on educating all of us about Sharia is critically important. With former Muslims United, as well as, of course, with your most recent book, check it out, folks, The Devil You Don't Know. And also, you can check out what Noni is up to at thesharia.waronwomen.org. Noni, we look forward to working with you. Keep up the good work.
I'm very glad.
Next up, Cynthia Farahat will be giving her take on it from the perspective of someone who has just left Egypt in this pursuit of freedom. Straight ahead. We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. As advertised, we are joined by Cynthia Farahat, a fellow at the Center for Security Policy now, I'm very pleased to say, who is by origin from Egypt, as was Noni Darwish. She is a political activist, writer, and researcher. She has helped found secular movements in Egypt, including the Liberal Egyptian Party and also the Mother Egypt Party, and has been working since she was able to get out of Egypt in the wake of the so-called Arab Spring to shed a lot of light for all of us on what has been happening in her native land and what it might mean for the rest of us. We're very grateful to you for having spent some time with us earlier in the day at our press conference.
My pleasure.
And we are anxious to sort of reconstruct for the audience some of the important points that you made there, specifically your insights into how a country that is not Sharia adherent can nonetheless be subjected to this totalitarian doctrine?
Actually, I would even make a more bold statement and say that Egypt wasn't only not Sharia adherent. Egypt in the 20s and the 30s would be the sort of country that in today's political euphemisms would be called an Islamophobic country. At a certain point in time, we had the minister for education was Taha Hussein. Taha Hussein was known as an atheist, an apostate of Islam, and a blasphemous, who wrote a book that is currently banned. So, and this was the minister of education. Not only that, we had our minister our internal minister and the head of the government that was democratically elected in the 20s, Saada Zaghloul, burned the hijab in Tahrir Square in 1919 revolution, along with his wife and the Egyptian feminist Hoda Sharawi. And how did Egyptians react? They reacted with celebration and electing him to the government. So we were not, I don't think an American or European politician would go burning the hijab in Times Square and then people would cheer and elect him as the head of the government.
Okay, so that's where things started in the early part of the last century.
At the time, no one thought.
Has it changed over time?
Yeah, it happens. It happens because since the infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood to Egyptian military in the 1930s and 1940s, and perpetrated the 1952 coup d'etat, which we discussed before. But what happened was they have Sharia law does not always have to be brought about by jihad and armed war. That's not the dangerous part. I'd rather have jihad any time of the day than the stealth methodology of the mode of operation of the theology or the jurisprudence of gradualism. This is not a term I invented. This is a term, the gradualism. It has been discussed by Khairat al-Shatir, who is the strategist for the Muslim Brotherhood and a former candidate for presidential candidate.
Right.
Khairat al-Shatir, when he discussed gradualism, he said something that a lot of Americans that have their good hearts in the right place that want people to live happy is to have their Sharia court here for family affairs. But what Khairat al-Shatir said, the gradualism works that you target a person in a family and then he subjugates the rest of the family to comply to Sharia law in a matter of domestic affairs, and that's only a step. And this is conscious.
And then he goes on to try to get the surrounding community.
And then it metastasizes, but this is conscious because I have plenty of Muslim friends. Most of my friends in Egypt are actually Muslim. They're not atheists and not Christians. And none of them would ever attempt to do something like that if they live in a country in America, although they dream about what you have and they want to bring it there. So when a person decides to institute Sharia law domestically, this is part of an Islamist, political, well-organized, well-funded movement, and it's not a random act. And then it starts to advance to cultural centers, universities, and we can, of course, see the Georgetown University display that absolutely shocked me in a way that it looked like I was attending an event at some of the Muslim Brotherhood-controlled institutions in Egypt.
Well, you were actually attending an event by a Muslim Brotherhood-controlled institution in the United States, Georgetown University's Al-Walid bin Talal Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding, as I recall. Cynthia Farahat, you are, of course, not Muslim yourself, or a former Muslim, as was Noni Darwish. You were a Coptic Christian. But you were part of the secular community and movement in Egypt. You've confronted this pressure, this what they call civilization jihad, from the gradualists of the Muslim Brotherhood. Now that you're in the United States, apart from the Al-Walid bin Talal, a Saudi prince who's very generous, funding Muslim Brotherhood-related activities. What else have you seen in this country that raises alarms for you, specifically with respect to Sharia's war on women, that we should be alive to?
Actually, what I've seen is that their American feminism is not very different than Islamism in Egypt.
Oh, that's absolutely bizarre.
Sorry. Yeah, yeah. I'm not
feminist,
correct.
Feminist would be the antithesis of, you know, the Sharia program.
They're Islamist, as far as I'm concerned, that's
how
Islamism.
So?
When you have a feminist like the leader of the third wave of feminism, like Naomi Wolf, I was co-authoring a book back in Egypt about freedom of women, and I dedicated a chapter to the war of American and Western feminists on the subjugated and oppressed and destroyed women of the Middle East. Because when a person like Naomi Wolf writes that she felt free under the hijab, which is a unified costume for a slave, when she felt free under slavery, that's an insult. That's an insult to everything. We should stand for a decent human being.
We certainly are finding very, very infrequent help from these feminists to women who, like yourself, come here warning of Sharia. Phyllis Chesler, one of the very few feminists who has actually come up on the net in a positive way on this, has called the burqa a mobile prison. What is it that's going on, as best you can tell, that has caused the vast majority of these feminists to look the other way, or worse yet, in some manner, as you say, actually enable this kind of Sharia penetration into our country?
I think the most dangerous notion right now is the political correctness. That's a form of a stealth war against America and American exceptionalism. And that has been started, to my knowledge, by a lot of people that were close to the Soviet doctrine or communism. So I think political correctness is the root of all evil. That you cannot call the enemy your enemy for what it is. So I think that America is going to go through a very dangerous road to fascism, but do it very elegantly.
And incrementally and gradually, as they say.
Yes.
Cynthia Farahat, we're going to have to leave it at that. This is a very sobering conversation, as have each of them been, and indeed I hope everyone will check out, if you didn't see the live streaming of the terrific press conference that Cynthia Noni and Karen Lugo, with whom we'll be speaking in a moment, provided us today. Check it out at thesharia.org, and you'll find much, much more there about what you can do to try to ensure that this threat most especially to women, but to the rest of us too, does not in fact metastasize in the United States of America. Next up, we will be speaking with Karen Lugo, who will give us her sense of what is being done in parts of this country, in fact, to metastasize this threat. Straight
ahead. Thank you, sir.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism. Yah, 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 yah.
All right, Shaquille O'Neal for rap. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260. In Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. Well, we have the third of our fabulous ladies who has joined us earlier in the day at a press conference rolling out www.thesharia waronwomen.org, a very important new contribution to our understanding of what is happening in America involving the insinuation of this toxic doctrine we've been talking about both today and most days, is in fact not only bad for women, but for a lot of other people besides. But most especially, we think it's important that women understand that it's the real war on women at the moment. Karen Lugo is our guest. She is the founder of the Libertas West Project and a co-director of the Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, a trained and quite accomplished litigator. She has been filing amicus briefs and representing victims of various kinds of Sharia predations, and has been inculcating in coming generations of lawyers skill sets that will be directly relevant to this fight at the Chapman Law School, where she is a adjunct professor. She contributes not only to our thinking on these issues from time to time, for which we're very grateful, but she is also very active with the David Horowitz Freedom Center and Family Security Matters and other important outlets. Thank you very much for joining us, Karen, both now and earlier in the day. You particularly, I think, brought to the party insights into how the threats that Noni Darwish and Cynthia Farahat have experienced elsewhere are beginning to manifest themselves here. Most Americans, maybe not so much most American women, but I think probably most other Americans would find that incredible. Give us some experiences that you've had as to how this, no kidding, is beginning to happen even in our own country.
Certainly, many Americans do not want to know, maybe, the level to which we already are encountering pressure from Sharia. Because it is a hegemonic force in a sense that it ultimately they will assert control or enough pressure on a society and down to the community level. When it's towns and cities, it's a matter of understanding that if there is a strict Sharia agenda in place, the community will begin to see demands from these groups. And at the same time, we have this campaign rolling across America to convince Americans that the Constitution and, well, let's say, they say normative constitutional values and Sharia are compatible.
And what does that mean?
Well, that's their weasel word. You know, normative means
normative.
Yes, they can say, well, we'll pick that one and not take that one. And yet, when pressed, they, of course, will never get specific about this, and indeed have cited John Locke as being a friend to Islam or having been influenced by Islam, therefore claiming that that all of the founding fathers' ideology that came from somebody like a John Locke would have been influenced by Islam.
But let me just make sure I'm clear about this, Karen Lugo. Are they saying, not quite so many words, but that the Constitution of the United States is an a la carte menu, or that Sharia is an a la carte menu? They'll pick this and they'll not pick that. I mean, or both?
You know, I think it is both in a sense that when it's the Constitution, it's a matter of depending on how it is discussed, presented, talked about. Yes, we like the fact that you are talking about free speech, but in talking, I do have direct conversations with some from the Faith Council and other of the Islamic leadership fora, and they will respond, oh, but you should not. And so it's, you know, we're also then admonishing you not to use your speech to do this or that other thing. And then, of course, we know they're active politically and legally to actually restrain speech.
Right.
So it is a matter of picking and choosing among our constitutional values, but on the same time with Sharia, they pick and choose what they want to talk about. Mm. And at this point in America, it is all a matter of we will tell you what you want to hear. Mm. Where Europe is now beginning to hear, where there is enough of a Sharia community around the cities, then Europe is beginning to hear this is the way that it will be. And certainly when you go into those zones,
it's not a la carte at that point. It's the whole menu, and you will eat it, like it or not. Karen Lugo, you mentioned this campaign. Tell us who is running this campaign to promote a false understanding of Sharia as completely compatible with our Constitution inside the United States. What kind of money is behind this? What do we know about its impetus?
What we understand is that ICNA, Islamic Circle of North America, has put $3 million into this.
Or obtained $3 million to put into it.
That is distributed. Although the actual seminars that are being hosted, of the several that I know of in Southern California, where we were quite active in monitoring and posing questions and being involved with coverage of it, those organizations were other of the Islamic alphabet soup. Mm. So whether money was transferred or this is now a united effort across across America on the part of many of the Islamic institutions to present to Americans some variation on the theme, and this will be over the next 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. Sharia and the Constitution are the same, and the founding fathers were enamored of Islam.
Yeah. Karen Lugo, the conversation I had a moment ago with Noni Darwish, is brought to mind by what you've just said. We're dealing with an alphabet soup of these Muslim American organizations. She maintains that many of them are the direct product of our recycled petrodollar transfers coming back at us through the Saudis and their friends, conjuring up what is really a Potemkin village, a fraudulent Muslim American leadership community. But they're marching according to a common plan, as the Muslim Brotherhood's strategic doctrine called for, or strategic plan called for. You mentioned Southern California. There are a number of these entities based, headquartered, operating from Southern California or California more generally. You've confronted a lot of these people. Would you say, based on what you know, that what you're dealing with here really is the Muslim Brotherhood?
I only know what surfaced in the document found during the course of the Holy Land Foundation trial. Americans don't like to talk or think about conspiracies to subvert anything. And since the Cold War, it's been very difficult for Americans to think that way. So I really focus more on the fact that it's conduct. It's what these groups do. Mm-hmm. It's how anytime you attempt to speak out and have a public debate on these matters, you're an Islamophobe, and it's coming from 3-4 different directions. So, yes, there are ways to document ties between various groups, and we know that the genesis of most of these was either funding or motivation, whether it's care and their link to Hamas and the rest of that. But I think it's most important to focus on what they are doing. Mm. And how so many have become intimidated from speaking out because, you know, whoever is the more influential group in an area decides that it is a matter of whatever levers they have available to keep people quiet.
Right.
And this is such an important conversation to have.
We, of course, have tried to sketch out the extent to which there really is a conspiracy here and that, as you say, we have Muslim Brotherhood documents in their own hands to point to that show how these organizations do, in fact, share a common agenda and are working in ways that, as you say, it's easy to see if you're looking for it. We've compiled this in a video form, folks, as we've talked about from time to time here, called The Muslim Brotherhood in America, The Enemy Within. You can find it at MuslimBrotherhoodInAmerica.com. I strongly encourage you to take a look at it and to follow the work of Karen Lugo, because what she's doing is at the forefront of this fight against the Sharia threat to women. And you can find out much more about what Karen Lugo and the rest of this marvelous team are doing at www.thesharia waronwomen.org. Check it out. And Karen Lugo, keep up the great work and keep coming back to us. It's always such fun, and we look forward to visiting with you in the near future. Next up, we will be speaking with Brandon Millett about an important initiative of a different kind, the GI Film Festival. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system
and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Brandon Millett. He is the co-founder and president of an extraordinary initiative, I believe. It's called the GI Film Festival. It's been running in the Washington area since 2007. And its purpose, transparently, is to help promote the making of good films about our armed forces and the contribution they make to all of us. Brandon Millett, it is great to have you with us. Congratulations on the start of the next round on Monday. I'm excited about what you have been doing and what it sounds like it's going to be the best run so far. Tell us a bit about how you got into this, why you did the film festival, and what you hope this particular run will showcase.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, this grew out of a conversation I had with my wife back in 2006, and She's a West Pointer in the Army. She served in the Army and the Army Reserves. And I'd always had an appreciation for the U.S. military. And we were noticing that a lot of the films that were coming out of Hollywood were portraying GIs in a negative light. And we figured, you know, this is not only unfair, but it's also unwise, given that we're at a time of war. And so we wanted to do something, you know, to foster a positive image for men and women in uniform. And we both love movies and figured, hey, you know, let's set up a film festival. Let's show the other side of the story. Let's show the service and the sacrifice and the integrity and the honor. And it sort of took on a life of its own. We're now in year six, and it's grown every single year, and we're really excited. I think this is going to be a dynamite lineup next week.
Well, just to dwell on sort of the past as prelude for a moment, Brandon Millett, your thought was, I guess, not only to give a vehicle for publicizing films in this space, that is to say a kind of pro national security, pro military angle, not much in evidence in Hollywood, as you say, but also, I guess, to incentivize people to get into this space. Is that right?
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, there are a number of different elements to this effort. I mean, the first is obviously to promote films that honor men and women in uniform. And like any other film festival, we want to see these films in theaters, on DVD, and in stores. And so that is definitely one element of it. But there are some others, too. I mean, I think one of the reasons that some of the films that do come out of Hollywood, you know, don't portray GIs in the most accurate light is because there's a little bit of a culture gap, and there's a misunderstanding, perhaps, between Hollywood and the American military. So we do a couple of things. Number one is we train military filmmakers. We host a boot camp at the festival, and we try to encourage military folks who are in the military to get into the industry to help correct some of those misperceptions. And then we also bring folks from Hollywood to the event. We've been blessed with having some great support from folks in Hollywood, and they come out, and literally we've seen some attitudes and some lives change just by merely being in contact with men and women in uniform. So yes, this is a much larger effort than merely promoting films, although that is a critical element of it.
Great. Gary Sinise is one of those I know who has been very much involved in these kinds of projects of Forrest Gump fame, among other things. But who else has been working with you in Hollywood that you might mention we would know?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, we've had Mr. Duvall, Robert Duvall, come out to the event. Rich Schroeder, Steve Baldwin. We had Glenn Close come to the event. She actually premiered her directorial debut. It was a short film on therapy for GIs who are suffering from post-traumatic stress. Also, Kelsey Grammer. This year, we're so blessed. We have Joe Mantegna, the star of Criminal Minds. We have some Army Wives cast members. We also have Pat Sajak is going to be hosting an international event for us as well. So we're just continuing this year to get some great support from folks out there.
This is great. Where do you show your films, Brandon?
We have a few different venues around the city. We're going to kick off on Monday night with an event honoring Mr. Ross Perot for his support of the troops. That's going to be at the Newseum in Washington, D.C. We're also going to do a film screening of a film called Chosen that evening. The next night, we move to the Capitol Visitors Center for a congressional reception honoring Vietnam War veterans. So we'll have some members of Congress there and some honorees from the Vietnam War. We're also screening a Vietnam film after that. And then Wednesday, we move to the Canadian Embassy for an international block of films, so international films from Germany, Australia, the U.K., Canada. Thursday night, we're at the E Street Theater for a Battleship Advance screening before it hits theaters. And then Friday through Sunday, we are at the U.S. Navy Memorial Theater. So a few different venues, but the bulk of our films will be at the Memorial over the weekend.
Great. Now, can just regular folks get tickets, participate in one or more of these events?
Absolutely. There are a couple of invite-only events, you know, the congressional reception, and those are also for people who purchase VIP passes to the festival. The majority of our screenings are just open to the public, and they just need to go to gifilmfestival.com, and they can pick up tickets.
Okay. gifilmfestival.com is the website. Brandon, just to come back to this question, are you sensing now, particularly at a moment when, let's face it, things are not going particularly well in Afghanistan. We're seeing, I think, public support flagging for the war effort there. The troops have got to be demoralized with what's happening. That this film festival is contributing to a connection between the American people and the GIs, because I ask this because one of the things that really worries me, I must say, is the seemingly growing disconnect between the military and most of those they serve, they protect. A lack of understanding on the part of most Americans as to the sacrifice that's involved, the hardships on not just the guys and women who are in uniform, but on their families as well. Do you sense that this film festival is contributing to that understanding and again, to incentivizing others in Hollywood to take these kinds of subjects on in a sympathetic and accurate way?
Absolutely. And, you know, what separates us from other film festivals is we don't just screen movies. And we bring the real heroes into the room. And that changes everything. So it really is, and I say life-changing experience. I mean, I've heard people say that they come to the event. We had one producer, a well-known producer, come to the event. He didn't know what he was getting into, but we brought him into the Wounded Warrior Appreciation Night. And the next day, we got a call from saying he and his wife had been up all night, now consumed with what they can do to support these men and women, these brave men and women. So, yes, absolutely, that is one of our main missions, is to connect the American people with the military. This year, we've got the National Guard out in force. They're going to have some vehicles out in front of the venue so that people can come up and meet them and talk to them and find out what their lives are like. So this is very much a public education effort.
Great. As it happens, I recently was in a room with one of the victors in American Idol, who spent part of the day, that particular day, at Walter Reed, meeting with some of these folks, and many of them obviously very badly wounded from their service to our country. And it was a life-changing experience for him, too, for sure. So I think what you're doing, Brandon Millett, is just of incalculable importance in terms of helping make these connections between those in uniform, those who are, as I say, putting their lives on the line for all of us, and the rest of us, so that we can overcome what may be the disconnect that we've had develop here, perhaps by design, perhaps simply by accident. But nonetheless, it needs to be breached. And I'm so grateful to you for what you're doing with the GI Film Festival. Brandon, I'm told that there was an important announcement made in Hollywood, one of the institutions in this country you're trying to bring along in this important work, just yesterday. Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, it's called the Got Your Six campaign, and we're so pleased to see this. It's really a massive effort on the part of Hollywood celebrities, industry folks, the guilds, to support the troops, to support men and women who are coming home, trying to help them transition back into society. They're hooking up with some nonprofit organizations that support the military. They're going to do a PSA campaign. So we really feel like this Got Your Six campaign is sort of picking up on what we've been doing for the last 6 years or so. And that is to try to foster, a respect for what our men and women in uniform go through on a daily basis and the sacrifices that they make for us. So we're just thrilled about it. And, when Hollywood does something positive to support the troops, we've got to congratulate them for that. And this Got Your Six campaign is really something.
Well, listen, I commend them for taking it on and look forward to hearing more about it and covering it, frankly, here at Secure Freedom Radio. But also, Brandon, to salute you for, I think you're right, having helped instigate some of this, at least, through the work that you're doing with the GI Film Festival. I look forward to talking with you further about the festival and to some of your colleagues in the days ahead and to showcasing this important film festival. Folks, check it out at GIFilmFestival.com and participate to the extent you can and pass the word if you can't participate yourself. Brandon, we look forward to talking with you again in the near future, and we look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.